Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Ken Z to the broadcast. Ken is the founder, chairman of the board, and chief executive officer of Fortinet, a cybersecurity solutions firm. Ken founded Fortinet in 2000 with the goal of making an impactful change in the network security space. Ken has grown the company to nearly 5,000 team members and $1.3 billion in revenue. Ken started his first network security company, SIS, in 1993 while studying at Stanford University. In 1996, he founded NetScreen, which developed network security and access products for enterprises and carriers. NetScreen was acquired by Juniper Networks for $4 billion in 2004. Ken earned a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in electronic engineering from Tsinghua University and a master of science in electrical engineering from Stanford University. I recently caught up with Ken in his office in Sunnyvale, California, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, people, as Ken discussed the three elements of Fortinet's culture, World-Class IT Principle 5, external partnerships, as he described Fortinet's technology alliance partnerships that enable end-to-end security for their customers. We also discussed Fortinet's five stages of security, Ken's path to becoming a successful entrepreneur multiple times over, his partnership with his brother, Michael Z, and a variety of other topics. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you'd give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. Z, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT. It's great to be with you today.
Great to have been in that program.
Excellent.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. And I thought we'd begin with your role as co-founder or the head of Fortinet. I wonder if, in your own words, you could describe Fortinet's business, please.
Yes, Fortinet I founded in 2000, almost 17 years. On the idea, we really want to make some impact change in the network security space. Fortinet is my third company in the same space. Other two previous company, NetScreen and SIS, they deal with the first generation network security, which is really secure the connection through firewall and VPN. More like your air travel, right? So that's for the first generation. When you have a ticket, you can just get on the airplane. But today, when you travel, you can see they need to inspect your luggage. Then you have to maybe go through some security check, X-ray scanning, all the other things. You really need to look at what's inside. Right, so that's the same thing when we start the second generation network security, Fortinet. We really need to look at the inside the connection. So because most malware or virus or intrusion come from permitted connection. That's come from the user or from the partner or customer. You already have a firewall policy allowing them to come in. But if they have some content which may damage, may cause some other issue, then the firewall cannot stop it. That's how Fortinet started. Today it's been 17 years. It's about 5,000 people now, and with over $1 billion, and keeping growing more fast.
How do you, especially, I mean, even in the period that this company, to say nothing of your career, which spans a longer period, as you point out, how do you remain current? You work in a field where, no doubt, of course, you are thinking proactively, but also there's an element of reactiveness that's necessary based on how the threat landscape, for instance, among other factors, is evolving. I'd be curious about how you and the company remains current in your own evolution over across the 17 years you've been in business as Fortinet.
Cybersecurity is a very dynamic space. That's where I like the industry. Being here running three companies for 25 years, really, it's always changing dynamic. You always have to learn things. Every year, the user, the vendors are facing different challenge. And there's always new application come up to the internet which need security to help secure it. And also the amount of data come to the network. We estimate in the last 10 years, it grew over 40 times. The amount of data started
traveling
40 times. Other side was internet infrastructure, which built about 40, 50 years ago, which only connect the device or whatever based on IP address, right? They don't check in what's the content, what's the application, what's the user, what's the device, what's the location. So all this has to be handled by the security. So once all this data and all this kind of important e-commerce goes through internet, it's very important to apply security into there. But on the other side, whenever there's a new application come to the internet, the old one also starting to apply, still there. One key thing we feel about really, you need to adopt the new change quickly, but also you need to keep improving old function, especially improving the performance. Because on the network side, the challenge is also every 2 years, the speed double. At the same time, there's just millions of applications keeping come up, plus all the mobile device, all the cloud, all the IoT. Without security, a lot of applications, a lot of business will be more difficult or pretty much impossible to leverage the internet, the whole networking infrastructure. So security is starting to get more and more important. Interesting enough, like when I started Fortinet 17 years ago, when I started my first other two company 20, 25 years ago, security only count about very low single digit, like 2-3% of the IT infrastructure spending. Now in US, they're over 10%. Right? So IT spending also grow like 5-6% year over year, but network security spending probably grow around 10% year over year. It's a pretty good growing space. And also very dynamic, a lot of change happening. That's where the innovation is very important. And same time, follow the change, quickly adopt the change, and also find a way to integrate. And same time, addressing the performance issue, the cost issue, also very critical for the company to be successful.
You mentioned the sanctity of innovation and having an innovative culture. I just walked through your rather large headquarters here and saw the wall of patents that you have. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you could talk a bit about, first of all, I'd be curious sort of roughly how many there are. It's certainly too many for me to count, but I'd also be interested more about the way in which you've encouraged people to seek patentable ideas and seeking out those very patents as a distinction of that innovation.
Basically, there's a three word on how we build a culture in Fortinet. It's open, it's teamwork, and also innovation. Yeah, we have over 400 issued patents, and also there's more than 300 pending coming soon. This is the biggest number of patents in the industry. You know, network security space, probably 3-5x more than the next other competitor. That's where in the whole company we keep it very, very open, and that's where including not only open on the organization level, but also open on all the idea and teamwork. That's one of the culture we build in the company. We say it's innovation. You often need to keep up the innovation. You often need to learn what's new thing come up, quickly apply, and see how to helping customer and helping the all these different new application and make it more secure and enable a lot of other new application to be applied in the internet space. Internet itself, when they started about 40, 50 years ago, is really applied to a trust entity within U.S., few universities, some government entity connect together. It's quite different than today's global connection. And there's over billions user. There's like tens of billions device connect to the internet and all global different country, different usage. So that's where we found out how to keep up the change, how to apply the innovation and in the space is quite important. There's a few things we're actually more unique how we did it in the space compared to other competitor. One thing we call is SPU, the Security Process Unit. So we are the only network security company design our own ASIC chip. We call it Security Process Unit, which can process the security function 10 to 100 times faster than the general purpose CPU. Average per chip may take about 3 years, and also you need a few generation. So that's average about 10 years to see the benefit. That's where from the very beginning we see, hey, this is important space. We really need to look at a long-term investment, a long-term innovation.
And there's a dearth of security talent in the technology landscape. A lot of CISOs, technology companies, and enterprises more broadly speaking have difficulty in finding a great security talent as a result of that. I'm curious what you and the company have done to help facilitate the growth of security talent across the landscape.
So we do have the biggest training program, education program in the space. It's over 100,000 people trained, certified. We call it a network security engineer. And there's about 70 universities globally working with us. That's because the biggest issue in the cybersecurity space is shortage of experts. It's growing very quick, but also need a lot of expert to help in and making the space better secure. So that's where we feel training is also very, very important together with the innovation.
That's great. You've talked about how there are five different stages of security that Fortinet plays in. Can you define the five and the way in which you do?
Every year, there's a like 100 to 200 keeping come up. join the space. We feel the first stage, right, always the detection stage. So that's what whenever there's a new security company come into the space, they always try to detect if there's something wrong, whether you get intrusion or get hacked in, or how to detect the malware, the intrusion. So that's why I say probably 90% cybersecurity company, all the startup, pretty much all in the detection stage. And they try to detect something wrong and then notify the user, hey, something wrong there, you need to do something about it. The issue is really there's so many applications, could be so many alarming messages come up, and making the admin, making the user so difficult to manage. Right? There could be hundreds of thousands of alarm messages every day. How to deal with that? That's more to the second stage, the prevention. Prevention is an inline device. So they can take action automatically. They can shut down the connection. They can stop certain applications, stop certain connection there. Prevention is more difficult. They have to be in line. They have to take action. They also cannot block the good traffic. So if you block some good application, then the user will complain about it, right? So you can block the bad one, but also cannot block the good one. So the force posture has to be very low. And how also has to be performed, has to have a better performance in order to not slow down the whole network connection. So that's where only about 5 to 10% company move to the second stage, called the prevention stage. So that's move to the third stage, they call the integration. So how to integrate multiple inline prevention devices together, like make it working together into a single device the best. That's will be the third stage. That's where you see Cisco or Juniper, they keep acquiring some company, and Juniper acquired my previous company.
Yes. This way.
The challenge for this acquisition is really how to integrate them together, how to make it as a single device and lower the cost and the performance. That will be pretty challenging because if you have a different function, different architecture, different team, even different location. So that's where integration become very challenging. I think globally, probably less than 5 companies can do integration better. You have to own your own technology in multiple functions, all this technology integrate together, and also have to apply it into a single device. That's where Fortinet is one of the company can do integration quite well. And that's where making the other networking companies, some other company based on acquisition, it's very challenging to go through integration. I say only like 3 company, 4 company the most can do integration better in the network. And then the level 4 above integration, then is the performance. So network security on average is about 50 to 100 times slower than the networking device. That's what compared to the routing switching, they are easily can go to 100 gig, even higher speed. But network security can handle 100, probably very few companies can go through the 100 gig or gig level. So because, like I said earlier, you have to perform a lot of additional computation to handle the security function. And also, Moore's law apply every 2 years, network speed double, right? So network security also have to catch up. So that's the other challenge on the performance. And then the number 5 we call is the value. The value including the cost, including the quality, including easy management. So that's also security device tend to be much costly. That's where on average, our calculation per SIM support, network security is about 200 times more expensive than the networking device. So that's where the cost and the performance sometimes prevent the big deployment, the broadly deployment of network security. Actually, yesterday I just come back on trip, Japan and Germany. We have a user conference. We talk about this 5 level of stage computation. And a lot of audience actually, they like it. They also gave me some very good example, like a car industry. German cars good on famous for the performance, right? So that's where they eventually went in and, hey, perform much better. Everybody have all the good experience there. And then the Japanese car, they're good on the value, whether the cost or some quality or some other things. That's in the end, they went in more based on the value or based on the performance. That's I studied few it's interesting happen in the same space, in the network security space. There are so many players and each competitor try to come up their new function, there are all this integration. But in the end, how to make an user, when you deploy the network security, not slow down their infrastructure, at the same time give them good value so they can apply the network security broadly at the same time, easy to manage, better quality, and better cost. That's eventually will have more advantage from a competition point of view.
Very interesting. You mentioned earlier that in a relatively short amount of time, the budgets on average that are being put to security have quintupled from roughly 2% to 10% or more.
Yep.
And this is representative, among other things, of an increased emphasis at the board level, at the C-suite, yep. the creation to a much greater degree across that period of chief information security officers or chief security officers, depending upon how the moniker is formed within different companies. Having worked with so many different companies in so many different industries, I wonder if you could share some of the best practices that you have seen, especially with the development of the CISO role, his or her interactions with the CIO or other technical people within the organization, ensuring, of course, that the enterprise is secure, but also ensuring that it is not so secure that the faucet is turned off from an innovation perspective. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about what some of the lessons that you've seen among some of the better companies with which you have collaborated?
Fully in the customer base is covered quite broadly, from the Fortune 100 company to all the other SMB business, to the branch office, to the other mid-sized enterprise. Each business, when they use the internet handle security, there's all different need, and there's also a kind of a different approach. For the big enterprise CISO, like I said, there's so much very important data they have to protect. And also, today's a lot of data, they're changing from the traditional in their server room, they can stay in the company network, in the trust environment. Now, we call the borderless anymore, and there's just no border anymore, right? So that's where the data can be in the mobile device, can be in the cloud, can be also come from the IoT. So it's really different than 10, 20 years ago. You can have a trust environment that protect from the untrust outside connection. That's making this kind of a more challenging for today's CISO, and they even have to protect inside the company because the internal segmentation. They is not just about connection anymore, it's really the infrastructure. So they have to cover not only inside the network, but also how the cloud, how the endpoint, how the mobile, how the IoT, and how the others, because the data can be everywhere. But that's the challenge facing a lot of CISO. If someone has a CISO or whatever, they manage network security and networking, they can see they easily dealing with 20, 30, 40 different vendors. Network side, security side, endpoint side, all kind of things. That's one of the reason we feel fabric architecture, infrastructures is better. It's really they can make all this working together better, because you have to coordinate different function, different device working together to provide the best security.
That's interesting. Another approach that you've discussed is the need, for lack of better terminology, of the development of an ecosystem, partnerships, whether it's security companies working together, or from the enterprise perspective, developing an ecosystem that will suit one's needs to mitigate risk appropriately. Can you talk a little bit about the way in which you've thought about these partnerships that make up a security ecosystem?
That's where the security fabric, we call the Fabric Ready program. There's already have 30 partner working together, including the biggest networking company, the biggest server company, the biggest operation system company, and also the biggest internet company there. It's all Fortinet Ready partner. So that's where we're working together to make sure they can have all these different product, whether security product or the networking or the application, they can working together to helping user to secure the whole infrastructure. Not just some point on the network side, not just some one application or two application. It's really the whole infrastructure to working together. That have to be all these vendor working together. Even most of the time, we also compete each other. There's a few organizations we are also the member founding member, like the CTA, they call the Cyber Threat Alliance. There's a 6 founding member. Most of the time we compete, but we also are open to each other, sharing a lot of intelligent information. So for that, it's one of the founding member. We believe we are the only one also open up our API and to a lot of our competitor, and also to the partner, like I mentioned, all the biggest networking and server of this company, and make them all working together. So helping each other partner together, that can lower the user, the system admin, the CISO's management cost. Because security, the biggest issue is not who has a better device, it's who can manage better. Right? At the same time, the management cost is pretty high compared to the equipment cost.
Across your experience as an entrepreneur, you've worked extensively with your brother, Michael Z. And I wonder, How has that partnership worked? There are a lot of people who would probably find it rather difficult to work with a sibling, but I'd be interested how you complement one another, how you work together, and clearly what's been a fruitful partnership across multiple decades now.
Yeah, we are the only two kids in the family, so I still work together. I think the good part of we are both engineers. That's where engineers train to work together to whether build something or build a company. And on the other side, we also each apply into some different area of expertise. So he's really very good on some technology. And also for me, I feel I'm maybe a little bit more dynamic, more broad, and not that deep in some area as he is, kind of complement each other. But interesting, so far we are not only working together, we also try to compete in a lot of things, right? So it's really no, we kind of argue a lot, but also in a good way. That's bring the better truths come out from the argument.
I'm also curious, you grew up in China, the son of a couple of academics, but you chose to come here for university and stayed. And I'd be curious, as an immigrant entrepreneur, somebody who came here, again, first to study, then next to pursue a dream as an entrepreneur, as you've done so now multiple times over, what is it about the business culture and ecosystem here in the U.S. that made it attractive to you, not only to come initially, but also to stay?
Yeah, it's interesting. My parents are both professors in the probably the best university in China, Tsinghua University. And their dream is always, I also later become a professor teaching. So that's where somehow interest in the area, networking, and they sent me to here because that's where Stanford and also that's one of the best university. They're probably the biggest university contributor on the internet format in the early days. Their ideal situation is I finish a PhD here and then go back to teaching.
In China?
In China. Yeah. And it is not quite my dream. from my early days, I went to professional volleyball player. Right? So that's where I was trained to play that way.
People who are listening would not know you're quite tall.
I'm 6'5". I was trained to play professional volleyball. But then in the end, my parents kind of forced me to go to the college level instead of play professionally. And then when I come to here, it's very interesting since really Stanford has the culture, they always connect with the industry. And it's not just a you finish whatever your study in the academic area. So they're very connected with the industry. And that's all this company in the Bay Area, like Google or Yahoo or Sun Microsystems. There's a lot of companies all come from there. You can see once I get in the environment, it's the entrepreneurship and other things they taught me, which we have not learned anything from China there. In the college, which make me pretty excited. And also, I kind of accidentally started a company. Initially, just try to play in the industry, helping some friends, some other company build up, set up internet connection. And eventually found it very, very interesting. Once I acquired some customer behind, I started to feel, oh, maybe let's start a business and do all this internet setup and also helping set up the firewall security starting to get interesting. And eventually also starting to build a product. So that's how my first company started when I still a student studying at Stanford. But the first company always making all kind of mistakes, right? So we kind of did for about 4 years. And made some money, but not quite successful as some other bigger company ramp up quickly. So that's where I restart again, the second company, Nesgreen, which is also much successful than the first company. Eventually, we sold for $4 billion. Also learned a lot of mistakes and learned from all the mistakes, and let's start Fortnite as a third company. So that's where every time we can learn something new, improve it better, both on the business model, on the product, on the idea. That's to make it pretty excited. I think from myself, I never, maybe other 5, 10, 20 years, I may go back to teaching. But so far, I feel pretty excited about running in the business side. Yeah. And that's where still different than what my parents' current thinking, hey, you should go back to the academic.
Oh, maybe you'll fulfill their dream eventually, then if you go back to academics. If you were to do so, do you foresee doing it here or going back to China?
I think that all the families in here, that's also, we see also this space is the cutting edge, is the best advanced area to do internet security. And that's, I feel, probably more in here in this environment now.
That's interesting. So if I'm interpreting your answer to the question correctly, Ken, you were almost an accidental entrepreneur at first. It was not necessarily your deep ambition, but through your collaboration with your fellow students, you developed a business and found that you enjoyed it, found that you had sort of a proclivity for it. And I'd be curious, especially as someone who didn't, maybe from an early age, dream of starting a business. In fact, you dreamed of playing sports professionally, as you point out. What attracted you to it? What aspects did you feel or learn that you had in you that were well suited to being an entrepreneur?
Like when I was young, I never dreamed to be an entrepreneur, right? So, and also that's probably also not have the environment to do that. And also when I come to Stanford, I also got in. I also want to be, hey, let's just graduate, get a PhD, then go teaching somewhere. But somehow the environment and also the entrepreneurship from the university changed all this. And also I found out I like the entrepreneurship. And not only you have to learn things quick, not only on the technology side, but also on the business side and operation on the other part of it. At the same time, you also kind of working with a lot of other player, or whether competitor or co-worker, whatever, in the industry. It's a very dynamic, fast-growing industry. So that's why I feel probably entrepreneur fit me better compared to teaching. That's where I'm learning something new every day. At the same time, I also like to focus in this area, whether the network security, internet security. I feel this area is so exciting and a lot of potential. And that's where in the last 20, 30 years, all three companies are in the same space. And each time we try to do better. So that's also, I feel it's important for the entrepreneur also be persistent, be like a dedicated. And also that will be also quite important to be long-term successful.
Well, Kenzie, it's a pleasure to have spoken with you today. Thank you for taking time with me.
Thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Please join us next week when my guest will be Stuart Sackman, the Corporate Vice President of Global Product and Technology at ADP, a $12 billion human capital management software and services firm. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.